Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional right of freedom. Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmed and Dwight in his absence for a couple of days. That is going to be, it's just going to be you and me minus him. Well, of course, not everything is about him, and then because everything is from now until Thursday is just about you and yours truly here. So, but Home Run continues as always, irrespective of who is sitting in the studio. Home Run must continue, and for this week, at least for the most part of this week until Thursday, is just you'll just be listening to yours truly here. The time is 25 minutes left to the hour of 5. If you have lost your watch and your phone is dead and you are tuned in that way, in that case, then thank you wherever you are tuned in from. As we all know, actually, for those of us that like to keep up with current events, especially, well, national, regional by that, African-wise, or global, there, as you head towards the end of the year, events are more like a series of activity basically just piles up to the point where you don't know which one to talk about first, but, COP30 started today in Brazil, in a city I still have to learn to pronounce, and that event is running from the 10th, I think, up to until next week, the 21st. The 21st of November. So the last one took, the last one before this one took place in Baku, Azerbaijan. That was COP29. COP28 took place in the UAE, 27 in Glasgow. So these are just a series of events. Today's discussion is not going to be based on a COP, on the ongoing COP30, because today is more of a ceremonial opening type of event that basically occupied a significant part of the 10th, or more like the beginning of the COP30 discussion. Today's discussion here on Home Run is about a climate, and so it's going to share a lot of things that is being discussed at COP30. Not being discussed because seriously, the main discussions have not started yet. It's just a lot of COP30. This is what was agreed. The climate financing commitment goals were made at COP29. COP29. It's more of a reflection. It's basically the same thing that you see very good teachers do. Every new class that every beginning of a new lesson, they reflect on what they did the previous lesson, to jog your memories and make sure that, we're not wasting each other's time, each other's time here. So a large chunk of today, as you can imagine, as we have seen, was occupied by the introduction of this is the president that's going to be chairing the whole event for then this week and basically the whole of next week, and these were the agreements that were made, not agreements, these were the commitments that were made in at COP29. And this is how much of it has been accomplished, and this is how much has not been accomplished. Although from day one, you have people crying, we have made a lot of commitments about, financing. A lot of countries are not receiving their money. Like, really? Is this a handout? Well, it turns out it's more like a handout than anything else. But today's discussion is based on that, the financing discussion, because the energy transition discussion, especially a green energy transition, we are not talking about any type of energy transition, green energy transition. It's not an easy one how do I put this? In comparison to fossil fuel or traditional old, let me just use the word old, old sources of energy generation, like coal, for example, natural gas, fossil fuel. These forms of energy, throwing nuclear in that bucket, basically when it comes to energy yield, energy yield, energy production. If you look at raw material that you feed, you know, raw material that's used, versus the amount of energy that's, you know, the amount of energy that's harvested from the raw material. And you're looking at quantity here. Nuclear energy basically is the big boss. Nuclear energy generates, massive amounts of energy from very, you know, from a very small amount of, you know, from a very small amount of, a very small amount of uranium used. About 500 grams? Not kilograms. About 500 grams. I know it's less than 1 kg, less than 1 kg of nuclear, of uranium-235 can generate the same amount that you get, the same amount that you get, how to put this, to generate the same amount of, to use coal to generate the same amount of energy that you'd get from 500 grams, for example, of uranium-235, you would need 1.5 ton of coal. About 1.5 ton of coal for you to generate the same energy you would from about 500 grams of uranium-235. Now, at this point, I'm looking at that and going, really? And we were here talking about energy transition and left out, because you have to understand, the International Atomic Energy Agency had to fight tooth and nail for the, basically for the global, for countries and a bunch of, multinationals, world and a bunch of countries across the planet to incorporate nuclear energy generation in their energy mix as part of the energy transition. But here's the thing. If you are using, take for example, 500 grams of uranium-235, to generate the same amount of energy you would from from 1.5 ton of coal. Can you imagine how much 1.5 ton of coal, how much greenhouse is depositing into the atmosphere? That's a lot. If I had to pick one, I would have gone with nuclear, because if all I'm using is 500 grams, that means the waste I'm generating is equally less, at least way less in comparison to 1.5 ton of coal. But for some reason, someone sat there and thought, you know what? I think we're just going to push all this aside. The good news is, the International Energy Atomic Agency fought tooth and nails, and then the nuclear energy was then incorporated in, into the energy mix. The thing about nuclear energy is that, nuclear reactors, especially the large industrial scale, not the small modular one, the large one requires a lot of water to cool down. That's because that's how much energy it produces. It heats up everything a lot that, used nuclear fuel cells, after they pull them out of the nuclear reactor, after the after the energy have been used up, now after the fission material have been used up, not completely, of course, it's still radioactive as a heck, after taking them out of the nuclear reactor, of in which they spend about 2-3 years, somewhere below 5 years that they spend in there, when they take them out there, they must submerge them to cool them down. They must submerge them in a pool of water, like a literal swimming pool, and literal submerging them for about 6 to 10 years. I feel like we don't understand nuclear power very well, because nuclear is a lot of power, a lot. If you are so hot that you need, 10 years for you to calm down, that's some serious temper issues. So, While the COP30 guys have just, they convened, obviously, as you can imagine, diplomatic things, they convened, the convening started, a while ago, and the ceremonies and stuff and welcoming everyone, introducing the new president and stuff started today. So there's not really much to talk about there, except, most of the information is basically coming from, for today, at least is, and I reckon to some degree tomorrow and pretty much throughout the event is going to be, about the reflection, a reflection of all the commitments that were made at COP29 in Azerbaijan, that, how far are they in terms of progress? Because, the adoptions are different from one person to person. One country, by that I mean one country, two country. I came across a very confusing video this morning on social media, which sort of like reminded me just energy transition discussion. Because it's more often pointed out, because it's a very harsh reality that every country have to deal with. You can't ask Namibia to carry out energy transition at the same rate as Switzerland. That's just borderline impossible for Namibia, because they have different, different economic, economic capabilities. If you have to do it instantly, it comes with economic impact, Namibia is going to suffer massive economic impact compared to a developed country like, like the Scandinavian countries, for example, your Norway, your Denmark. Danish is the denonym. Yeah. Now, so that means then, even though you are looking at 190 something that are coming together every year to say, let's carry out this energy transition. Let's move from the less green, less green in terms of environmental friendliness, not that they are literally green forms of energy, to more green one, ones that are environmentally friendly, like wind and solar, for example. I don't know I still don't get why nuclear is not in that category, because this problem would have been solved a long time ago. Just throwing nuclear, problem solved. As long as you just have to tighten the regulations under disposal. Because people, everyone knows multinational corporations are very good at cutting costs. So, the regulation part is one that we are also going to emphasize a bit, based on this year, April's Energy of the Future and Energy Security Summit that took place in London. Proudly sponsored and by yours truly, International Energy Agency. This international organization sometimes just make my brain spin, because you have International Energy Agency and then International Atomic Energy Agency. The Energy Agency is general. The International Energy Agency is general in a sense that they look at everything energy, wind, solar, nuclear, you name it. But the nuclear guys only focus on one source of energy. Nuclear. That's it. The rest, wind, solar, they throw all that to the International Energy Agency. Now, let's start with the summary here now, shall we? More like a introduction. Should I call it an introduction? Let's call it a introduction / reflection. One, energy transition is not a one-size-fits-all. That's the most tricky part. And now back to the video that I almost forgot that I used, that I wanted to use it, as a reference. One gentleman pointed out something interesting, that no children are raised the same, even if they are siblings. No children are the same, even if they are siblings. Now, at this point, I'm going, but what is he up to? What do you mean? No, because at this point, I'm thinking DNA. No, he didn't talk about any of that. But what he meant by no children, even if they are blood siblings, are the same, is because that's actually true. Some kids, some parents have a mix of boys and girls. Now, then he goes on to explain that even if a couple just have girls, one is the firstborn, one is you know, maybe you have a couple of people in the middle, a couple of kids in the middle, and the lastborn. In that way, they are different. And some of these kids were born and raised at the different, you know, at different times in this couple's relationship. Maybe one of them, especially, you know, lastborns are usually born when the couple is stable and they have everything around them. They are not running around hustling, which is, I mean, I totally understand why lastborns are spoiled. Because we, the firstborns, or on the other hand, we are the experiment when it comes to, are we going to get through this? How they, at this point, both the parents are scared after death and thinking, how the heck are we going to, what the heck do we do? And now they're trying to figure in the middle of them trying to figure out their respective lives, they're trying to figure out their relationship, which is their marriage, and at the same time trying to figure out how to raise a kid. Which is why firstborns are hardcore. Because let's face it, we are the experiments. Parents just, you know, meet, fall in love, is like, sure, let's have a kid. What do you think it's going to be like? Because they have no clue how it's going to be. And then they go through us, firstborns, now they have a clue. We were like the guinea pig that they had to test all the parenting skills on. And then by kid number 2, 3, 4, they, you know, they have built a precedence of basically, you know, memory and, you know, tactics and skills on how to raise a kid. By the time that they get to the last born, that thing is spoiled rotten. Yours truly here on the first born, on the other hand, needs like a million years of therapy. So no kids are the same. Because even if they are the same gender, they are born at different times and you know, a different phase of the couple's relationship. Maybe one of them was conceived or born when homeboy or homegirl had a Ben 10 or Camperotto on one side. So this, all these tensions also spills into how that child is the child is raised. And at this point, I have my jaw on the floor going, you know, I thought you were crazy in the beginning when you started this whole statement of no kids are the same even if they're siblings. So, what does that have to do with, what do I know about raising kids? What does that have to do with climate? Well, everything. Not literally, figuratively, you are looking at countries that are different geographically. That means they are impacted by climate change differently. Namibia, for example, is not going to suffer from snow problems where they have an extended winters and less rainfall. No. Less rainfall for Namibia? Check. Extended winters? Not very much. Extended droughts, on the other hand. Oh yeah, now we're headed somewhere. So, the negative impact that Namibia suffers in terms, as a result of climate change is going to be wildly different from what China suffers, from what Russia suffers, from what, Denmark suffers, from what, Canada suffers. So they're different. So the transition then, on the other hand, is, must also be left to, you know, to exactly that. You basically will bring everyone in this giant building, or more like this giant conference called the UN General Assembly or Conference of Parties, number 30. And then you tell them, you know what, we have to, now this whole thing basically started from 20, or more like the main oomph of this whole transition sort of like kicked into main gear back in 2015 during the Paris Agreements, where they made a series of agreements to basically, you know, speed up the transition in a way that by 2030 or 2050 at least, we are seeing a reduction in the increase in temperature, or more like the depositing of all these greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, by transitioning in every way we can, not just in energy generation, but also in energy generation in a broad sense, not just the energy that you use in your house, but also the energy that you use to power your car, the energy that you use to power your fridge, your stove, and all this. You have to carry the transition. Well, first of all, they were very naive about it. I have to point that out. Now, at least that's according to my observation. They just thought, you know what, we can just put a pause on everything oil and everything nuclear and move straight to wind and solar. And then Mother Nature reminded them that, may I remind you, there are these things called clouds. They are going to come, whether you like it or not. As long as it's that season, they're going to come. And then obstruct your solar panels from the sun. And the wind also. Well, the wind is going to blow, but it's not going to blow the same everywhere. There's a reason why the Green Hydrogen Project, at least here in Namibia, is located in Lutheritz. Because Lutheritz is one of the windy areas in this country. So the stronger the wind, the more energy you know you're going to generate. And for a lot of areas, especially as you go further north, and eastwards of Namibia, we know that this is where you find a lot of trees. And trees, anyone that did agriculture or geography knows that there's this thing called windbreakers when it comes to protecting your crops. Planting a fence of trees is one of those. So wherever you find a lot of trees, there's not going to be a lot of strong winds blowing, unless you're talking about building windmills that are way taller than those trees. Because wind speed also have to do with, increases with altitude. Interesting enough. In the same way that pressure increases with depth, if you're talking about water, and also atmospheric pressure. Now, this transition, that means Namibia's energy transition cannot be a copy and paste of America's energy transition, of China's energy transition, of France's energy transition. Actually, France, at this point, we may as well just leave France out of the whole energy transition, because most of their energy, the energy that they generate, and France does generate a lot of energy to the point where they export some of it. Guess where it comes from? Nuclear. The only question is, where is the uranium come from? Where is the uranium coming from? That's where the Francophone countries now become very interesting point of discussion. That's where countries like Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso becomes an interesting subject to discuss. And bombing the heck out of one country so it can help you with your energy transition is just it's diabolical. So this whole energy transition discussion then can never be a copy and paste. Now, yours truly, Helmut and Dwight here, while talking about one Eastern European country, or is that Eastern Europe, or in the Eurasian region. You find this country called Albania. Now, Albania has a lot of surface water, so they generate a lot of their energy from hydroelectricity, which is very environmentally friendly. So, in other words, they are way ahead of the environmental of the energy transition game. But that's because, well, they're blessed by Mother Nature. It's like me and my homies going shopping, and while we are just looking at some of these clothes, trying to pick which one we like and which one we don't, I'm always going to ask one of my homies to help me reach something that's above 1.53 meters. Because, well, I can't reach there. So, if a shopkeeper, for example, comes in and start telling us everyone must reach the clothes they want to buy, I'm like, okay, first of all, that's a nice joke. Second, that's also a nice joke. Third, did I mention that's a nice joke? Because are you not? How am I supposed to reach there? So, people are different. In the very same way, countries are different. And when it comes to geography, when it comes to things of climate change, geographical location plays a significant role. Some countries are colder than the others. Some countries are hotter than the others. Some countries are windier than the others. Some countries receive more sunlight exposure more than others. Namibia is one of those countries. A lot of European countries don't have that blessing. There are countries like parts of Norway and Finland where they have to spend 3 months of no direct sunlight. I wonder how they sleep. And then they come with another 3 months of no darkness. I don't think I can survive that. Because I'm going to be like, okay, my watch is telling me it's 12 o'clock midnight. Why the heck is the sun right there where I can see? That's an easy way to confuse an African. Because in Africa, I think it's very simple. 6 o'clock, it's dark. Depending on, you know, depending on the time and season, of course. Let's take a commercial break and we'll come back on the other side and talk more about the transition and especially with the financing discussion. How are things going? Commercial break.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original or Vintook Lemon, let's cheers to connecting, to moments shared and good vibes, anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
And welcome back. We continue. If you just tuned in, this is A Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. I should, but you know, my head is just stuck in there. Change, you change. No, it's a... You know, it's just temporary. So I'll just be throwing Dwight in there, here and there. So, in preparation, more like, before this, COP discussion, you know, before this, COP 30 discussion, which commenced today, Namibia itself, you know, last month, started from the 28th to the 28th of October to the 1st of November. Yeah, it was a 2-day event. And we did talk about here. So, now they Namibia hosted, you know, hosted the 2025 Climate Change and Future in African Conference in Africa conference. And one thing that was pointed out you know, in that conference was climate change doesn't know any boundaries. That, you know, it's like a sinking ship example that was, you know, that was given to me someday. That, take for example, you are on a ship that's in the middle of the Indian Ocean, because that's where you find some of the deepest parts of the ocean waters. And you see someone carving a hole. Where they are sitting. You can't just go, you know what, I mean, they're just carving, you know, a hole where they're, you know, where they're sitting. I'm sure that if they just get that hole deep enough and big enough for the water to, you know, for the water to start coming in, it will, that water will just drown him. No, unfortunately, if you let an idiot carve a hole in a ship that you are sitting, I mean, on a ship that you are on, when that water comes in, everyone is dying. That's one thing I like about natural laws. Take the Titanic ship, you know, for example, when it was made with human laws in mind. You have low-class deck, middle-class deck, and high-class deck. In the language of, Elizabeth, the creme de la creme deck. And that was the case. That was the case until the ship hit the iceberg. Then water was like, look, we don't care how much you have in your bank account. We're drowning all of you. Those that did not get to lifeboats died. And now there are a lot of men that were very wealthy that died on that ship. And some of those men were very wealthy. They would have had a significant influence in the implementation or the beginning or the starting of the, you know, the Bretton Woods institutions like the Federal Reserve Bank, which is why the whole, you know, in the conspiracy world, the whole Titanic story is also roped in the Federal Reserve, blah, blah, blah. But that's just a, well, that's just a, that's a minor deviation. Coming back to, you know, coming back to Namibia's, to the event that Namibia hosted, before the COP 30 discussion. Climate change and futures plural, I swear. I thought I was reading that wrong. Futures in Africa Conference Series 2025. That was hosted here in Namibia. The discussion, one of the main agenda on, you know, during the discussion was, we're going to have to cooperate and work together to tackle this climate problem. Because, well, when a drought comes, it's not coming for one country. It's coming for a region. When a flood comes, it's most likely coming for a region. When a tsunami comes, when it's a monsoon season in some parts of the world, but we don't have to worry about that. When things like tsunami and earthquake and all those things come, they're not coming for, you know what, I'll just check one house of that guy that was just denning coal and then I'll leave the rest of them. Nope. Flood comes, floods everyone. Including the, you know, insects that had nothing to do with the climate. You know, that had nothing to do with the burning of whatever it is that you are burning to provoke Mother Earth. Now, during the summit of the future of energy security in London back in April, the International Energy Agency executive Fatih Birol listed what he called three golden rules in just energy transition. And those three golden rules for me basically speaks to the whole financing discussion. Because the main energy transition, the main part of energy transition that would like to carry out as all the signatories to this whole Conference of Parties, or COP for short, which I'm told is in Afrikaans is a head. Like, the head on top of your shoulder. Clean your mind. Not that type. Where are we? Three golden rules of just energy transition. And now this is just energy transition. And I like the choice of words there. Just energy transition in a way that you don't want to force any economically small country to carry out, its energy transition at the same pace as, economic superpowers like the US, China, and Russia, for example. Like that would be, because these guys have the money, they have the expertise, they have the technology, it's very easy for them. In comparison to us, we'll have to import everything. We'll have to import the expertise, we'll have to import the machines, we'll have to import everything, and that's just going to take a toll on an already strained economy. So, just transition, excelente choice of words. It starts with the diversification. That's the first point that that Fatih Birol makes. And diversification, he makes that in reference, interesting enough, the exact analogy he uses is the eggs in one basket analogy. Don't put your eggs in one basket. In other words, make sure that during this energy transition, I think that's the, that's the beauty of the whole energy mix discussion, because now you are allowed to complement your primary energy sources with what you'd call maybe secondary ones for the meantime that they are still under development. Because we know that, wind and solar are excellent and very green source of energy. There is no such thing as 100% green. Because at the end of the day, when you follow everything to its source in terms of where the raw material of that particular product is made out of, it's going to take you straight to the extractive industry for the most part. So that means there were mining activities involved at some point. So it's not 100% green. It's green in comparison to a lot of other very non-green forms of energy. Take your electric cars, for example, because that's one of those parts that I think it's somewhat very deceiving. 100% green. Yes, it's an electric car. It's 90-something percent green, not 100%. Why? Because it has plastic chairs. Because it has plastic parts. Plastics are made out of fossil fuel materials. fossil fuel is the same thing that we want to get rid of because it's ruining the environment. So every time I run into someone that say, you know, this product's 100% green. I'm like, really? You know, sometimes you just don't want to start a debate. Then you go, okay, really interesting. That's nice. When I get me one of those, I know for sure I'm not getting it. Now, this is because somewhat the energy discussion is an interesting one if we just be honest with ourselves. Because, for one, you know, beating around the bush when it comes to this discussion is where we are bringing up mitigation strategies like carbon credits, for example. Carbon credits, if you ask me, that's the dumbest way of solving climate change. Carbon credits is giving people with money a get out of jail free card when it comes to transitioning. First of all, they have all the car fleets, they have all the jets, they have all the yachts, they have all the choppers, they have all the, you know, they have all the aeroplanes, jets, same WhatsApp group. But now you are telling me to stop driving my dangy Botswana because it's polluting the environment because I don't have carbon credit. In other words, I don't have a piece of paper that is showing you that I have a forest somewhere halfway across the planet that is offsetting, balancing the carbon that my car is producing, so it doesn't matter. When the whole idea of carbon credits was explained to me, or carbon offsets was explained to me, I went like, right. A bunch of academics came up with that nonsense. I give up on education. It doesn't make sense. Whether you own first of all, you don't own a forest. Yeah, you can put your fence around it, but guess what? Because the whole idea is, you are a billionaire somewhere in Canada, so you fly to Namibia, and you find this very, you know, 500 hectares of land, and you meet someone from the environment of, from the Ministry of Environment, and they basically, or more, maybe it's a privately owned land, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You manage to buy that area, and then you rehabilitate it to make sure that it's basically forever green in its natural form. And then you go to the US and then drive a car that is emitting carbon. When everyone is being told to transition from the traditional internal combustion engine to EVs, you are like, no, I'm just going to continue driving my Vroupas. Now, when they ask you, why are you not switching? Don't you know that you are depositing a lot of, poisonous gases in the atmosphere and we're trying to carry out this transition here? Then you respond with, well, you know what? Somewhere in Namibia is 500 hectares of land that belongs to me. Now, what's going on here is the carbon that my car is producing here in America is being offset by that 500 hectares of land somewhere in Namibia. A quick question. Actually, it's not a question. It's a statement. That's a very dumb statement because, first of all, Namibians have cars. And that land is in Namibia. So you're telling me this portion, this 500 hectares of land is saying, you know what, because I'm bought by an American billionaire, I'm not going to absorb any carbon dioxide from here. I will create some kind of ethereal channel, to absorb the carbon dioxide that's being produced by, my owner somewhere in the US. That's the only carbon dioxide that I'll be using to make photosynthesis. First of all, trees don't know that. Now, you see, just the stupidity in mankind is sometimes is astounding. Because, I swear, someone will have to explain to me the whole idea of carbon offset. Because the one I just gave you, is the one I was given, and I'm still trying to wrap my mind around it because it's ridiculous. Just stop doing it. No. Blue Carbon is one of those companies that bought a lot of land on behalf of a bunch of very very rich Emiratis. And Blue Carbon. This is basically a broker company. These guys were given money. And then they basically scoured the whole African continent, especially the eastern part. I remember, I think they bought a land somewhere in Kenya, Tanzania, Zambia, I think, and Malawi to some degree. And I'm not sure if they also bought in Mozambique. The whole idea is, again, carbon offset. Again, I don't get it because it's stupid. It's just a bunch of rich guys saying, you know what, we are making these rules that are very difficult for us to follow. So just figure out a financial way for us to escape them. So only the poor can pay.
Great news. Import just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwala konongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushe ndife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM konmora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. Carbon offsets, still don't get it, but for some reason it's considered as one of the climate mitigation strategies. The only difference, you can only afford it if you are loaded. But if you're broke, you're gonna have to carry on with the transition, even if it negatively impacts you. This is going to create a lot of issues, especially in terms of cooperation. The thing is, the people that can afford the carbon credits are the one that we are begging, especially a lot of, small countries. They are the ones that we are begging to give us money so it can help us with transition. And this money that they are giving us to help us with the transition, how are they making it? By drilling oil. Who came up with this? Look, climate change is one of those things that it keeps becoming apparent by the day. Even someone that did not go to school will tell you that something is happening with the environment, because there are a lot of our elders basically that have never set foot in the class that will tell you that something happened to rainfall patterns. Back then it used to rain maybe early, September, October. Now you just go through December and then it starts raining in January and you're like, what the heck? Now when am I supposed to start farming? So we will have to, we need a whole new paradigm of of approaching the problem in terms of, working around the transition in terms of energy, but it impacts everything, education, agriculture, you name it, environmental protections, especially agriculture. Because now you just can't plant any seed. You have to find, you can't just crop or more like farm with any plant. You have to farm with plants that are what word am I looking for? You have to farm plants that are not gonna die in the current environments. You know, drought resistance or insecticide, you know, once, not insect resistance. I don't know where you're getting that insect. Because, every animal or every plant, we all have predators. That's just Mother Nature's way of making, you know, things move in circle. And you also have to figure out which seasons to plant what and how. So we'll have to re-educate ourselves on how we do things that our ancestors have done for 1,000 years. So back to Fatih Birol, the International Energy Agency Executive Director's three golden rules of energy transition. The emphasis of today's subject is the money part. At least what is a conundrum for me when it comes to the energy, energy transition discussion from non-green to green forms of energy. This energy discussion, I find it very fascinating because not the transition, the financing of the transition, because everything costs money. No one is going to mine solar voltaic material for you for free. Even if they decided they're going to mine it for free, the company they buy fuel from to run all those heavy moving machines, they're not going to give them that for free. You can follow the chain from there. Even if that company that was going to give you oil for free, the shipping companies that is bringing all those oil tankers, they're not going to do it for free. And the guy that is basically piloting the ship and the entire crew, they are not going to do it for free. Now, you see, the problem here is that we are caught in a hamster wheel. We are running around in circles. We want to solve a problem, but that problem requires a lot of money to carry out the transition. The transition requires a lot of money. And when I say a lot of money, boy, do I mean a lot of money. Take, for example, according to the third quarter, UN Climate Change Quarterly Update Report. Last year, that is in 2024, global clean energy investment topped $2 trillion in US dollars. That's just last year. Where'd that money come from? Donors. Now, ask yourself one question. These donors, and some of them are major oil money multinational companies. So, let me get this straight. We gather every year, and then we tell the companies that are polluting the environment to give us money so we can transition from using their products into not using their products so they can run out of business. Oh, come on. I thought I was the comedian here. It turns out I'm not the only one. But the transition discussion is not one. The transition discussion is not one that is a conspiracy, because some of these events are also sponsored and to some degree by by these oil multinational companies. Because the thing here is, take for example, if every oil company, for example, let's just use oil as an example. If every oil company halted production in 24 hours, let's just put a pause on this and then we'll figure the rest out. You know what's gonna happen? Forget energy. The price of clothes are gonna go through the roof. Why? It's because unless you can afford 100% cotton, which is insanely expensive, let alone linen, whatever clothes you are wearing has to some degree some ingredients of fossil fuel. If you're sitting on a very nice, comfy plastic chair like mine, very comfy. Rotating one, very comfy. That plastic have gotta go. Everything you own that's made out of plastic have got to go. Everything. Now, picture this. Your computer has plastic parts. Your car has plastic parts. Your shoes has plastic parts. Your TV has plastic parts. Your house has plastic parts. You are surrounded by things that are made out of plastic parts. Now, if you were to transition instantly from that, all those things are going to disappear. Yeah, we're going to have to start hunting animals, new skin, and then you have what we call in Tumpukushu, mpunda. Don't translate that. Don't ask your cab, you know, ask your, get yourself a kavango friend. They will help you explain that part. How many of us will really look nice in mpunda? This is a type of apparel, if I can be diplomatic for once, where you have a string around your waist, and you take a rectangular piece of cloth, and then you secure it from the front with that string, and then you put it in between the two poles that helps you mobilize to a predetermined location, aka walking, and then shove it again on the other side at the back, and it looks ridiculous. When it comes to chest cover, yeah, you know what's the good thing for Namibia? If we did that, Himbas are instantly going to become fashion designers. Italy is going to be put out of business. For one, they know, they've been doing it for a very long time. And there are those of us that did it, and then we abandoned it, for suits and Louis Vuitton somewhere. I'm not saying that was a terrible thing, because I can't imagine me in one of those outfits. With all due respect to guys, I like my trousers. Thank you. Now, moving on. The interesting part about the finance is, we're asking, especially developing countries, we are crying out to developed countries to help us with the finance that we need to carry out the transition. And as the third quarter of the UN climate change report just emphasize the mind-numbing figures in money that is required to carry out the transition, because just 2024 alone, just last year, the global clean energy investment topped $2 trillion. There's a reason why I'm putting much emphasis in that, because that money is coming, it's not coming from one person, it's not coming from one entity, it's coming from multiple entities, and it's an investment, because it does point out in the report, clean energy investment, or green energy, if you will. Green energy investment in 2024 topped $2 trillion. I don't even want to convert that to Namibian dollars, because I'm afraid I won't be able to pronounce the number. I'm sure it's in 100-something trillion. Because I don't want to Jacob Zuma my way out of that number. Now, put that figure in your mind, because we're going to get to the part where financing as part of the energy transition is very important. Because I know that every time that diplomats meet at conferences like the COP30 that's taking place in Brazil, for example, we talk a lot. And this is where we start saying things without first considering the economic consequences that comes with it. Because $2 trillion, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. It's $2 trillion more than I have. Oh. Now, increasingly, according to the report, the real economy is aligning with the goals of Paris Agreements, aka the 2015 Paris Agreements of the whole, you know, put the energy transition discussion, more like energy transition discussion, into practice so that we can just run with it type of discussion. Even now, even if still unevenly, in other words, different countries are carrying out the transition differently. Different countries are doing, are investing into clean energy at different rates. And there are a lot of factors that basically factors into this. One of which is different countries have different economic capabilities. Again, you can't compare Namibia and Switzerland. We can die. Real death. Commercial break.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
So, where were we? The money required to carry out the transition. If you just tuned in, homeland, home run, depending on where you're from. Anguena, home run, you're forgiven. Everyone else, home run. Okay. Let's really give my favorite region a break. So, considering the amount of money that is actually required in this transition, let's just go back to the three golden rules of this just energy transition given by the International Energy Agency Executive Director Fatih Birol. Really hope I'm pronouncing that guy's name correctly. Now, well, he's an expert in the field of the organization that he runs, which is energy. So he likes to say that at the end of the day, numbers speaks volume. You can say whatever you want to say. At the end of the day, when you just do the math, you'll realize that what you were saying was more than, well, you know, was more fantasy than reality. Now, diversification is to go through that one more time. Investing into multiple energy sources, do not put all your eggs in one basket. Technical failures, among other things, are a major possibilities in everything. So is the case in the energy sector. Relying on only one source may be catastrophic in the event, for example, of a technical failure. So you can't just rely on wind. What happens when there is no wind blowing, but the sun is shining? So then you're like, okay, you know what? I also install solar panels. Right. And then come one of those cloudy summer day, which is very calm and some very nice shower. So no sunshine, no wind. Congratulations. You're in the dark. So now you have to bring in all these other complementary energy sources as part of your, well, whoever coined the term energy mix was a genius. So, and then, the finance part has to, you know, the finance part in terms of just energy transition comes into predictability. That's a golden rule number two. Predictability. Enacting policies that reflects investor confidence. Yeah. Because I'm sure if you have $2 trillion, would you put it in an investment in a country that has had several election disputes to the point where people have gone to a civil war to resolve those disputes? Absolutely not. Nope. And when it comes to election disputes, that's us. But don't worry, we are very diplomatic. We always, you know, go to court, settle everything, and then everyone is happy again. In Mozambique, the guy starting the disputes runs out of the country, then leaves everyone behind to, you know, kill the heck out of each other. That's actually one of the reasons why I don't like about war, because wars are started by a bunch of rich guys that gets out of the country, them and their family, as soon as the war starts. And then they'll be supervising everything from abroad. They'll be like, yeah, well, you have, and, you know, this is the dumbest part about war, because they'll be there motivating you via Zoom with the today's technology. You are fighting for the right cause. Aluta, he's seated in an air-conditioned room somewhere in Hong Kong, and he's telling you, just go out there and die. When this whole thing subsides, I'm here in Hong Kong, so that when this whole thing subsides, and, well, you're all dead, I'll just come there and assume the presidency. What? Look, this whole thing made sense in colonialism. It made a lot of sense in colonialism. Because, well, we're just telling a bunch of light-skinned guys, like, dude, you guys don't even belong here. First of all, you need sunscreen to go out. We don't. So, can we have our country back, please? Thank you. And they kept saying no, and plane fighters were like, fine, we'll do this our own way. All of a sudden, guys went like, okay, fine, but resolution 435. And the rest is history. Right, so energy infrastructure takes a lot of time and money to set up. Thus, ensuring investors about their return by their return on investment over that long period of time. Over that long period of time. It requires what? A lot of confidence. Picture yourself as a billionaire that's somewhere, in China. And you want, you know, there's this amazing energy investment opportunity that's in Namibia. But it requires a lot of money. Now, you're a billionaire, so money is not a problem with you. So you approach the Namibian government and tell them, I want to invest in your country. But I know that I want to invest in your oil industry. I know it's still under, we are still trying to get things off the ground. According to the baseline survey by Deloitte Namibia, we are looking at 2030, 2035 before we look at, before we start, basically, take it to 2035 before we start looking at, before we start talking about production. Now, if I'm an investor with a behind load of money and you are not giving me assurance of the policies that you are making that will, regulate the industry that I'm about to, that you are asking me to invest in, and the political atmosphere of the country that I'm about to invest in, if things go in, if you show me any sign that things can go up in flames because of political tension anytime, I'm taking my money somewhere else. Look, it's not a problem. If you have your money, just invest in your own industry. Except who is walking around with $2 trillion? Nada. Now, looking at countries like Namibia, for example, is one of those very few, believe me when I tell you, very few that are looking inward for investment. But even the investors that you find here in Namibia, they will want that assurance that, okay, this industry is going to take 10 years to start generating return on investment. Can you assure me that there is not going to be a civil war in between now and 2035? Because if there is a civil war, the whole country is in chaos, my investment is up in flames. Who'd want to lose $1 million? Actually, forget that. Who'd want to lose $10? This is the middle of the month. So yeah, $10 is a very easy example. I know I don't. Because 10 minus $3, I can get home. Actually, plus $3. Minus $3, I'm going to get home with a swollen face because the taxi driver is like, okay, fine, you don't have $3. I have 3 slaps. But bring the $10 first, then we can make arrangements on how you're going to make the $10, how you're going to make up for the $3 shortfall. So, $3. It's all fun and games until it starts going, you see, it's either you give me $3 or we go to my house. Okay, dude, you know what? It's either you give me $3, I give you 3 slaps, or we go to my house. And like, yeah, just do your best with a slap. I don't have $3, and that other one is not an option because me is straight. And even if you met someone who's gay, everyone would go like, dude, seriously? That's a terrible way to come out of the closet. Because of remaining $3. Anyway, good policies. What investor confidence basically means is at least one of those things that it means. Is good policies, you need good policies. You need good policies that reflect long-term stable economic and political atmosphere. Like I pointed out, no investor in their right mind, whether that investor is Namibian, African, or a foreigner coming out of New Zealand, Australia, China, Europe, the Americas, no investor in their right mind will invest in a country with questionable policy and political stability. I know it's very easy to say, oh no, you can just go and... Every single one of us that are broke now, a moment of silence for us, we would never make that terrible decision, at least not with the amount of money that's required to carry out this transition. No one is going to do that. So, you have to assure the investor because it's their money. Again, if you want it, you just go with your own money. Namibia likes to look is developing a very nice economic tendency of looking inwards in terms of investment. But it doesn't matter whether that investor is a foreign investor or a domestic investor. What they are looking for is they are not giving you a donation. They are investing. They are taking this money and putting it in a business venture with the expectations of getting that principal amount back plus interest. It's the same business model, whether it's being done by a foreign investor or a local investor. It's just business, Baba. It's just business. If I give you my money, I want it back. Or I'm calling Red Force. Now, golden rule number 3. Corporations. This is where you start now hearing words like LDC, that's LDC, yeah, least developed countries, aka developing countries. This takes us to the beginning of my show where I pointed out that this whole energy transition discussion is a discussion being had by over 100 and something countries. And these countries have a lot of differences. I'm not talking about language or tribal differences, speaking of which. That would have been a terrible example. And I'm sure I'm going to, you know, find a way to throw it in there somewhere. Yeah, I found it. Miss Universe is ongoing. And people on an international platform, seriously, shame on you guys, on an international platform are saying a lot of mean things about Miss Namibia. Really? Are you that dumb? Because I'm reading through these comments. I'm like, guys, maybe, I'm not recommending it, maybe just do it here. But on an international platform, you do realize she's representing Namibia, right? So every mean thing you write in there about her, they're saying, oh, what's wrong with these Namibians? They're not saying what's wrong with this Kavango, what's wrong with this Bambo, what's wrong with this Herero, what's wrong with this, what's wrong with this Damara. No, there's what's wrong with these Namibians? That's called washing your dirty linen in public. Every country has its own difference, but they don't go around shouting it over public platforms. My God, I went through that. I'm like, okay, for the love of God, what's wrong with this country? It turns out, if there's one thing, you maybe you just don't understand how the internet works. If it's taking place, take it for example, well, Miss Namibia being live streamed by NBC, well, that's mostly being viewed locally. But Miss Universe, it's in the name. Okay, it's not the whole universe, but the whole planet is watching. It's like you going out to the mall and then start fighting with your siblings at a shopping mall. It's embarrassing for the whole family. Not because those families that are not fighting don't fight. No, they just don't fight in public, you idiot. They just fight internally and settle all the disputes and go out. And every score they want to settle, they step on each other's toes outside. They keep it to themselves until they get home. And then you have Namibians that just decided, you know what? We're just going to go out there on an international platform and wash our dirty linen there. Now, for the love of God. Now, you know what that means? COP30 started today. Every Namibian, including the president, the president leading the delegates. Everyone at COP30 for the whole of this week and next week is going to be, where is she from again? Namibia. Oh, that country where Miss Universe representative is being said mean things about by the people from the country she's representing. Cuckoo mentality. So, coming back to corporations. Three golden rules. This is the last one. I only have 15 minutes before I say a goodbye. So just have a live read here, pay the bills, and then wrap everything up on the other side. Home run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Cooperation. Establishing energy-related diplomatic ties with more than one country. This is my favorite part that actually Fatibirol made back in April, because this is an interesting one, because he did point it out. He kept making reference to the war between Russia and Ukraine and how it impacted energy, Europe's energy security. Yes, a lot of European countries were heavily dependent on Russian gas, and when the war started, and some of their homies from countries we won't mention came and blew up the pipeline that was giving them cheap energy so that they can provide them expensive energy using their energy tankers. I mean, it's diabolical, but it's an interesting business model. Okay, it's diabolical. So you are just going to come and break my neighbor's solar panel so that because you and my neighbor are not talking, and you and I are friends. And I get, solar energy from my neighbor. So then you come and cut the cable that brings energy from my neighbor's house to mine. And then you start telling me, don't worry, I'll supply you with power banks at 3 times the price. What? That was the Nord Stream pipeline story. Still my favorite in the history of, in the history of energy discussion. Not everyone is your friend, Baba, because some people are. So, make friends as a country and get energy from, get a portion of energy from different countries. Just in case there is a political tension in between you and one of them, you are not left in the dark. Let me give you an example. Take Namibia and Zambia, very good neighbors. If Namibia got all its, 100% of its, of our energy, we get it from Zambia. We don't, it's just an example. Although we do get a certain percentage of our energy import from Zambia. Let's take, for example, if we got all 100% of our energy from Zambia. And then there's a diplomatic tension between Zambia and Namibia. What do you think the Zambians are gonna do? do you really think we'll be able to criticize them, even if they, you know, even if a dictator takes over office? We'll be here saying, no, that election was free and fair. We know for sure it wasn't free and fair. We just don't want to be in the dark, because we know they provide us 100% of our energy. So this is where the IEA executive director is going, have different diplomatic ties, energy-wise. Don't have one, because, well, today you're friends, tomorrow you're not. Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger died. Was that last year? And there's someone also who died this year that people are celebrating. I think it was last week. Dick Cheney. Oh. Man. People are mean. Dick Cheney is one of the, actually, you know, he's being criticized because he was one of the chief architects of the quote-unquote weapons of war, of mass destruction that led to the invasion of Iraq back in 2003. And he made a behind load of money because a company that he was a CEO of before coming back to the White House, a reference to the word back, to start engineering the whole invasion of Iraq, got some of the tenders that supplied the troops in Iraq with them. Look, I love American politics. It's really fascinating. It basically, points out a very harsh reality about geopolitics that Henry Kissinger and that one wonderful Indian lady, I keep forgetting that, came up with that interesting statement that in politics, there are no permanent friends and there are no permanent enemies. The only thing that's permanent in politics is interest. In other words, you and I are friends today. We can be enemies tomorrow. You and I are enemies today. We can be friends tomorrow. If we have the same interest. We are not talking today. We hate each other. And then the next day we discover oil in the middle of our border. I'm like, wanna be friends? Yep. And then you're friends. And then the oil runs out. And become enemies again. And this is, you're going to be enemies again, but you can be loaded enemies. Assuming you know how to manage your money. So, three most important point here. One, diversification. Have, use different forms of energy. That's not rocket science. Two, predictability. If you don't have predictable policies and predictable policies, political and economic atmosphere, every investor will be like, I don't want to put my money in that country because I know the Minister of Finance is the one that's going to chop the money. That's Mozambique, by the way. 2 point something billion by the Minister of Finance among the suspects. Can you imagine how these guys appeared to Credit Suisse, and they went, we want 2 point something billion to revamp our, maritime infrastructure. And Credit Suisse, among other different banks, there are several banks. I think, there are American banks involved. The IMF, I think, to some degree is involved in that. There's, Credit Suisse, and there's one Russian one I keep forgetting. They were all like, okay, you know what? Here's the money. And the minister and his homies were like, can you believe those guys? We told them we are going to revamp our, rebuild and also buy new stuff for our maritime activities. And they believed it. We bring the money. Let's go to China and get us an iPhone or 3 SIM cards. And they chopped all the money. And the country lost 60%. 60% of the economic, of Mozambique's economic loss, about 60% of the Mozambique's economic loss that comes from the tuna bond scandal came out of investors leaving the country. Forget the 2 point something billion that was lost. After investors came to realize that, they started packing their bags to leave. Why? Because they knew it's just a matter of time. Because the government, to pay this, to service this debt, will start increasing both income and corporate tax. Guess who is gonna pay that debt back? Not the guy that chopped the money. No. The investor that's bringing his money in the country. So the investors were like, I'm getting out of here. And they left. So they lost money that was actually stolen. Point of correction. They stolen the they stole the money they were supposed to invest, one. And then they lost money they were supposed to, you know, that was supposed to be invested in their country. Now, if you combine these two, take the 2 point something billion dollar if it was invested, and the already significant presence of investors in the country, that would have led to obviously an economic boom. But because of instant individual selfish gratification, someone decided, you know what, I'm getting me a few blue Lambos. That's just the, you know, that's the Commission of Inquiries and the, you know, Tembisa Hospital. But the point is, investor confidence. Now, if an investor is saying, I'm not giving you my money, and you know, well, if you have a history of chopping people's money, they don't hate you. And actually, at this point, the investors are not the problem, and you know that. You are. Quick break.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Welcome back. I have 6 minutes before I say goodbye and hand you over into the hands of David with Business and Economic segment. But before we continue, or before I wrap up, let's take a live read. This is a Vilvicha live read. 2026 applications now open. New programs. Faculty of Health Science, Master of Public Health, Level 9, Mode of Delivery, Distance. Area of specialization, maternal child health, public health nutrition, mental health and well-being, food safety management systems, sustainable solid waste management, innovative approaches in pharmaceutical public health, drug regulations, child protection and adolescent health, violence prevention and intervention. Application fee is $230 Namibian. And application deadline is 30 November 2025. For more information, please call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Vilvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. So, the song or the anthem that is sang at every COP, or basically every international gathering, is we have come up with the plans. It's the same discussion with SDGs, Sustainable Development Goals. It's the same discussion. We have made these plans. Now, how are we going to finance them? Oh yeah, well, donor countries, or more like donations, countries must donate. And the burden of donation is falling heavily on developed countries. And these countries are developed because they have a lot of economic activities, most of which is coming from their private sectors, because they have companies that are categorized as what? Multinational corporations. So these countries are, these multinational corporations are contributing to the economy for these developed countries to make the amount that, the amount of money that they are making for them to be able to donate to us. So, we are getting money from developed countries. These developed countries are getting money from mostly their private sector. And what business model are most of these significant donors to this transition? What businesses are they involved in? Most of them are into oil, extractive industry, basically, you know, oil and mining. The very same things we want to stop, especially oil. So, I say this again, but before that commercial break.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back. Energy transition, easy to say. It's easy to stand at the podium. And this is something that we are going to be seeing the whole of this week and basically the entire COP30 duration. This is what we're going to be seeing. Yeah, I'm seeing people standing there saying, no, money must be donated. It's true because, well, no one is going to work for free to carry out the transition. I know I won't. If you had a climate change summit, for example, and asked me to produce my, you know, to produce material that's tailored to that event so that I can go there and perform, I'm going to need some money. Okay, let's just say I want to, I tell you that, you know what, I'll just come and perform for free. So the taxi driver was like, so let me get this straight. You told, people that are hosting an event, that you are going to perform for free, and therefore you want me to drive with you there for free. Is the service station going to give me free fuel? And even if you went to the service station and be like, okay, you know what? We really love your idea. It's very noble. We're not saying it's dumb. It's very noble. It's a cold way of saying dumb, but our suppliers, they're not giving us this oil for free. So buying is going back to the source. Really, really way back to the source. So, energy transition, not a one size fits all. Every country has to carry out the transition at its own pace, if you want to be fair. But the financing is actually a significant part of this discussion, because at COP29 last year, COP29 last year ended with what is known as the Baku Finance Goal, BFG. Now, you see, SM Bukushu, every time I read the word Baku, I just want to, you know, start laughing. Because that's, if you hear that from Mbukushu, punch them in the face. It's a funny way of describing someone's ears. When their ear looks like one of those, when their ear looks like they're about, to have a sign that says so much more, DSTV, satellite dish. Then ears like that are the ones we describe as a Baku. It's short for an bakuruka. It's more like a spreading as you would an umbrella. That's the closest I can go translating that. But turns out it's one Eastern European country's capital city. Baku. Nice. Stay away from languages. because once you start mixing them. So the Baku Finance goal agreed at COP29. So that's where they, you know, at COP29, they agreed that, you know what? Yes, it's an excellent idea. It's an excellent idea. This whole transition is noble. Save our planet. Check. All these things. Again, noble. How do we do it? It's very easy. All we just have to do is stop using fossil fuel, move away from coal, and then, you know, energy mix, and then stop using oil. Boom. Transition. Excellent. Now, how do we do it? Well, for one, we must start producing more solar panels. Keep going. How do we do that? We need to mine more material that we need to use the solar panel, to make the solar panels. Keep going. We have to mine a lot of, there we go. We are already at mining. So now let's just come back slowly now, shall we? The people that are mining, are they doing it for free? No. The machines that are doing the mining, are they being supplied to the mining company for free? Nope. The guys that are refining these resources, are they doing it for free? Nope. Both the company and the people, none of them is doing it for free. Yeah. And Africa have seen, at least in 2025, has seen a significant increase in solar voltaic, basically solar panel import. The shipping company is not going to bring those for free. Money is needed. The company that's producing the solar is not going to do it for free. Money is needed. The people that are working for that company, they're not going to do it for free. Money is needed. The company that is delivering the raw material that yours truly, Continent Mother Africa, is supplying, thanks to our damasry, the company that's shipping everything, money is needed. The company that's transporting this raw material from the mine to the port, money is needed. The company, the company and the people that are doing the mining activities on the ground, if you stop paying them, they're going on strike. Next thing you know, you're at the Labor Commission. Why? Because they don't do it for free. There is money at every stage, which explains, where's that amount? Which explains the $2 trillion 2024 into this whole energy transition discussion. Now, the same report also indicates that recent data shows that renewable energy became the largest individual source of energy generation in the first half of 2025, surpassing coal after nearly 50 years. Bravo! Yebo! Congratulations! Not congratulations, that's a lot of progress, so it's going to have to be congratulations. Now, and a recent open letter by the CEO with over $4 trillion in annual revenue pointed out their business cut emission by 12%. Yeah, not buying that. Look, I just have trust issues when it comes to politicians and CEOs. But anyway, I have to read their reports all the time. But just while also growing revenue by 20% over the same period. Now, nearly 90% of new power capacity was added to the global energy generation capacity, with a momentum rising across almost all major economies were renewable. So energy transition is taking a few steps, baby steps though, so they may be. But it's taking steps. But you can actually understand why those are, why it's taking baby steps. It's because, well, last year, global clean energy investment topped $2 trillion. That's a lot of money that must be invested very carefully. It's not just that $2 trillion is not one in one go or one bucket. It's different parts of the world in different, energy transitions. Some going with wind, some going with, some going with solar, some going with, biomass. That's not green because we're basically cutting down trees. Like, really? So. Adaptation solutions too are advancing with their transformative potential becoming cleaner. Efforts to scale and replicate are rising. Again, more and better climate finance is increasingly essential. Translation, this this transition is taking place. Excellent. At least we are making, the transition is happening. Excellent. Transition is happening. Good. And it's costing a lot of money. Now, if a 1 year investment is 2 trillion and you are still going, a better climate finance is increasingly essential. Everyone is looking at you going like, seriously, just how much do you need? Bottom line is global transition is going to need way more. That means we are going to be looking at a lot of COPs in terms of discussion. This is going to go for a very long time. A very long time. That brings us to the end of our show for today. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM, from yours truly, Helmut. You all have a blessed evening, and please do stay tuned for Business and Economic segment with David Shombe.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.